Okay, you're listening to Phoenix 98 FM. You've just heard I Know the Truth About You by Luke Grew. The band's a three-piece consisting of the familiar faces of Richard Jones from The Feeding, Cass Brown from Senseless Things, Delicota and Latterly Gorillas, and Ed Hardcourt, who's kindly joined me today. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Thank you for your time. How did Luke Grew come about?
Well, what happened was I made this record called Furnaces with the producer Flood. And I've made it, you know, we've kind of on and off been making this record for about 4 years. And then it was released in 2016 through Polydor. And then sort of within 6 months, surprise, surprise, it got buried. Shoved aside. So I kind of moved out of London. We're moving anyway. And ended up going on tour with the Afghan Whigs around America. And then I came back. And I'd written this record that was kind of instrumental and piano music, and because I wasn't really writing any songs per se for myself, or you know, and but from the Furnaces sessions, I had a few tracks kind of left over okay. that I'd always really loved, and basically one night Richard came up to the Wolf Cabin, my studio, and we had a couple of tipples, and I was playing him the songs, and then we sort of had this kind of. Kind of little lightning bolt look at each other and said, hey, I think, you know, it's a bit like Step Brothers, you know, when they go, hey, you know, prestige worldwide. and that was it really. And then we just thought, what about Cass, you know, and I'd always enjoyed working with Cass. We've done a few things over the years and it was just mad, man. Cass came up with Rich. And as soon as we listened to a few songs, but as soon as we just started to play, I don't know what happened. It just clicked. It was really amazing. Yeah.
So really, there is obviously the track Luke Grew without an X, but on the album first.
We came up with the name because I had that song, which was inspired by a book by Charles McKay about witchcraft. But also a friend of mine had given me a poster, which was a French movie poster of Curse of the Werewolf, the film with Oliver Reed, which is called La Nuit de Luke Grew. And it was on the wall, and we were trying to come up with a name, and one of the guys was like, what about Luke Grew? I was like, but that's one of my songs, man. And he was like, so, doesn't matter. I was like, all right, fine.
Fair enough.
That was that, really.
It works, yeah.
I feebly complained and put up a fight, but yeah.
But it wasn't to be, or it was to be, as it turns out.
Yeah. It's cool, man. And, you know, I think there was actually a band in New York, not very well known, but you know, called Luke Grew in the 80s or something. But you know, whatever. I mean, Nirvana had the 60s band Nirvana. Mm.
So. Yeah, and who remembers the 60s band anymore?
Just throwing in a lofty comparison there. You know,
yeah,
good measure.
So you released the debut single Painter of Trophies on red vinyl last year. I mean, does the physical sort of matter to you personally as in this mainly digital age? And I'm asking that as someone who has a copy of said 7-inch and physical does mean a lot to me. But I mean, it's
massively. I do stream. You know, I have like a sonar system and stuff, and I do listen to downloads a lot on my phone, but really I'm a vinyl man. I always have been, and I love the whole feeling of having it in your hands, having the artwork, and you know, still being like a kid when I get a vinyl and looking through the credits and the lyrics, and you know, I've always done that. And I'm actually so committed to vinyl, I have a 1973 Rockola jukebox in my kitchen. It has like 145s, and I'm constantly going to hopefully when they reopen, but I'm constantly going to charity shops and finding like totally amazing. I'll find like Louis Armstrong or Billie Holiday or every now and then a real gem, like a kind of just a, you know, random, you know, Sparkle Horse or something, or something really, you know, and that will make it into the jukebox. I even have a thing that makes the holes, you know, so certain 45s, if they were the thin ones that were made in the 90s, they break really easily. which is really frustrating. So I broke a few. Yeah, I literally bought eels, Novocaine for the sole, and tried to make a big hole, and it just snapped in half.
Snapped in half. Ouch.
Yeah, because it wasn't like that thicker. You know, that's why the 45. If you put, if I play something like I don't know, Ray Charles, drown in my own tears, or Frank Sinatra on the jukebox, it just sounds incredible. I just think the quality was a lot better.
Yeah, I think as vinyl went through its first death in this country, the quality of what it was being printed on did drop, and now that the collectible vinyl is just a joy to behold.
That's the thing. That's a really interesting point, because the vinyl, you know, with the emergence of the CD, I'm guessing vinyl sales went down.
And yeah.
But then the CD has now gone down, and the vinyl sales have gone back up, which is pretty great.
The band supported Supergrass on the reunion tour this year. I mean, how did that feel? Obviously, performing really fairly huge gigs with songs that the audience wouldn't have had the opportunity to hear because they're not really out there. And was that enjoyable, or was that different to normal?
No, I mean, it was just really wonderful, actually. I mean, we're all long in the tooth, and we've been around for you know, two decades, and you know, a lot of the venues I've played before. You know, never headlined, but our first ever show was at Glasgow Barrowlands. I mean, we couldn't have asked for, you know, for more, really. I mean, it was just so, I really enjoyed that tour. And I sort of looking back on it now in a kind of a bit of an odd way, because it was literally just before the lockdown.
Yeah.
And it seems like years ago now. But it was just incredible. We were very lucky. I mean, our first ever London show was Alexandra Palace. We're a bit spoiled, to be honest. It was a perfect fit, you know, us and Supergrass. It worked really well, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, I saw them when they played Oslo, so I didn't go to Ali Pali, unfortunately, but I know some people that went, and they said it was a brilliant night all round.
Oh, it was really great, yeah. I really enjoyed it, and the choral played as well. But it was a bit odd on the second night, because I think maybe quite a few people had bought tickets but didn't turn up because of the ensuing, you know, pandemic.
Yeah, indeed.
So it was kind of a bittersweet kind of feeling, you know, but
yeah,
great all the same.
Okay, I mean, you've now announced, you've moved the pre-announced live dates. So you've got dates coming up in December, which is Leeds on the 7th, Glasgow the 8th, London on the 10th, and Birmingham on the 11th. I mean, what can people expect from these shows?
Well, we just finished our record, which has been mixed by Cenzo Townsend, I mean, it's just sounding absolutely huge. So what we had to do with this tour, we were only playing for half an hour, so we decided, you know, on the six or seven songs that we'd be doing, but we've got like 12 songs on the record, so we'll be, you know, as a three piece, we have to work out how we can do it.
Yeah,
how we can do, so because there's quite a lot of instrumentation going on the record, we may have to get a fourth member to play live, perhaps.
Okay.
He can sit in behind a curtain in the shadows, and like all the other bands do. You'll see those massive bands, and then there's some guy just like
hiding in the background. Yeah, I can think of another ex-member of Senseless Things that. Well, I suppose he's a bit more to the front these days, but yeah.
Oh, I know, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, totally. I think we're just gonna probably. We'll probably be, you know, reeling out the whole album, to be honest. I think I think it's kind of a precursor to the release, you know, this little tour, first headline tour, and we're basically, you know, going back to all the territories that we were doing Supergrass, because we got a really, you know, pretty much every night we got some good reactions, you know. So hopefully there'll be some people turning up. Who knows? Who knows whether the gigs was?
Yeah, I mean that's the unknown at the moment, isn't it? It's, yeah, fingers crossed. I think we're all missing live music. All right, we're going to play some music now, and you've given me a couple of songs that have kept you sane, as I said, during lockdown. And the first one that I'm going to play is a Bob Dylan song. I mean, what can you tell me about this?
Well, it was around at the beginning of the lockdown. He just suddenly released Murder Most Foul. Which is not the one you're going to play, but I was just so excited because it was the timing of it. It was typical kind of Dylan, just suddenly like springing this upon the public, and the work itself is a lyrical as usual piece of genius. And then he released this other track. It was 17 minutes long. So I decided to choose I Contain Multitudes, which was the second song that he released. And it's just beautiful. It's like really something very sublime about it. It kind of stopped me in my tracks. And it's accompanied me on a few sort of solo walks around the country. So.
Okay, thank you. This is Bob Dylan.
Today and tomorrow, and yesterday too, the flowers are dying like all things do. Follow me close, I'm going to Berlin, Ali. I'll lose my mind if you don't come with me. I fuss with my hair and I fight blood feuds. I contain multitudes. Got a telltale heart like Mr. Poe. Got skeletons in the walls of people you know. I'll drink to the truth and the things we said. I'll drink to the man that shares your bed. I paint landscapes and I paint nudes. I contain multitudes. A red Cadillac and a black mustache. Rings on my fingers that sparkle and flash. Tell me what's next. What shall we do? Half my soul, baby, belongs to you. Well, I can't frolic with all the young dudes. I contain a multitudes. I'm just like Anne Frank. Like Indiana Jones and them British bad boys, the Rolling Stones. I go right to the edge. I go right to the end. I go right where all things lost are made good again. I sing the songs of experience like William Blake. I've no apologies to make. Everything's flowing all at the same time. I live on a boulevard of crime. I drive fast cars and I eat fast foods. I contain multitudes. Pink pedal pushers, red blue jeans, all the pretty maids and all the old queens. All the old queens from all my past lives. I carry four pistols and two large knives. I'm a man of contradictions. I'm a man of many moods. I contain multitudes. You greedy old wolf, I'll show you my heart, but not all of it, all of the hateful parts. I'll sell you down the river, I put a price on your head. What more can I tell you? I sleep with life and death in the same bed. Get lost, madam, get up off my knee. Keep your mouth away from me. I'll keep the path open, the path in my mind. I see to it that there's no love left behind. I play Beethoven sonatas, Chopin's preludes. I contain multitudes.
Right, that was Bob Dylan. We're back now with Ed Hardcore. Talking of lockdown, I mean, some people have said that lockdown's been giving them the chance to sort of create and be really creative with it, as of saying that it's kind of drained them, and you know that they've just got nothing because no social, no real social interaction, no going out.
Yeah.
I mean, how has it been for you?
It's very interesting because everyone is pretty much, a lot of people I've talked to are the same. You have either have this manic energy or this total lethargy, where you just feel you don't have the motivation, you feel a bit kind of detached. And so some days you're kind of not sure what to do. But I have been incredibly busy with lots of work. It's been mad. And I've just been writing a lot, co-writing with other artists, sending them music. They write a few lyrics, send it back, bouncing off each other. And I've been doing sort of recording sessions for other artists as well, just kind of, and then sending the files, you know, I mean, I'm literally sitting by my piano right now.
Yeah.
So, it's actually been insanely busy, so I haven't really had time to mope.
No, you know what I mean? there has been some positive to come out of it, but yeah.
No, absolutely. There's been a huge, I've written probably 5-6 songs for my next solo record, and finish all the artwork with Steve Gluck for my next instrumental record that's coming out in August. So that's completely done, and been co-writing with you know, various people like Blowna Faith, and who I've collaborated with a lot over the years. So just, it's kind of, you know, it's been great really. I'm just trying to keep myself motivated, and also, you know, we've got 2 kids, so we're kind of homeschooling. Today was the first day that our eldest went back to school, which is a bit kind of, you know, a bit nervous about that.
But, yeah.
It's a bit, you know, we're in a tiny village, so there's like hardly anyone in our class. So I think it's quite easy to sort of be socially distant, but still it's kind of inside. So it's a bit, it does feel a bit early, I have to be honest.
Yeah. And yeah, as a parent, I can see that the concern, you can't help but feel concerned about them, can you? And there's so many unknowns, but yeah. Hopefully.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, I think everyone's in the same boat, and we'll just have to wait and see. I hope that it's the right decision. Everything just seems a bit confusing, doesn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that the messages aren't always clear.
No.
Yeah. So you've mentioned sort of some of the working with other artists and everything. So alongside your solo work, I mean, you've worked with Blowna Faith. You've done some the excellent albums with Sophie Ellis-Bextor. You've done soundtrack albums. You've music for adverts. Musical director for It's Christmas at the Royal Albert Hall. I mean, have you got any ideas, any sort of things that you've not quite managed to bring fruition that you'd really like to work on, or that are in the pipeline? That sort of.
Well, you know, I'd really like to do for me. I just really enjoy doing soundtracks, like doing film scores. And that's always been, I'm a massive film buff, and I just really, I just find it really, it's very frustrating, but when you get it right, it's the most satisfying thing in the world. And you know, I've always thought visually when I write, like a lot of people, and I've always used sort of imagery from films and books and things like that when I write. So it just feels like it feels like the glove fits on this one, you know. And I would love to do kind of a psychological horror film, actually. That would be quite fun. So who knows, maybe down the line. But yeah, you know, if there are any directors out there who need a score and can't get it done because of the pandemic, you know where to come to.
Yeah, you've got
everything here.
You're there and ready and waiting.
Yeah, I can create my own sort of orchestral score, really. You know, and that's something that I've, you know, always wanted to do. And other than that, you know, I just feel like I'm pretty maxed out at the moment with various projects. So,
okay.
You know, but yeah, I think doing a big film.
And is there a dream director to do a film with? Is that are there someone that, whose films that you love? That...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, someone like, that's a really good question. I mean, my favourite film directors are people like David Lynch and Jim Jarmusch and people like that. You know, but obviously, like someone like Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola or Quentin Tarantino. That would be nice. You know?
They do, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy who, Miles Scholl, who masters a lot of my records at Abbey Road, he actually had to cut for Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. He had to cut the vinyl of as the orchestra played in front of Ennio Morricone. No pressure there.
Yeah, now that must have been slightly unnerving, I would have thought.
Yeah, but, yeah. I bet.
We're going to do the second song that you've given me to play now around lockdown, which is a Screaming Trees track. So, again, why have you chosen this, please?
I had just finished the book by Mark Lanigan, Sing Backwards and Weep, which is a pretty entertaining and quite brutal and harrowing in places, and quite moving as well. Quite a tough read, but enjoyable. And I also played on his record, so the record that's coming out at the same time as the book. When I read the book, what piqued my interest a lot was the period of the Screaming Trees that he wrote about, especially Sweet Oblivion and also the album Dust. And I revisited Dust and then forgotten how great it was. And particularly the opening number, Halo of Ashes, is the song that kind of... it's sort of I've been blasting that quite a bit.
Okay.
As well. So, yeah.
I'll play that for you now. Thank you.
She wears a halo of ashes, the specter on the wind. Thank you.
That was Screaming Trees. Mark Lanigan, you mentioned Queens of the Stone Age. A lot of the press have sort of linked Luke Brewer and the stuff that you're doing to Queen of the Stone Ages. But I mean, what interests me more is, I mean, could you see yourself doing something like the Desert Sessions? We talked about the sort of the fact that you do sort of work with a lot of other artists. I mean, maybe the Cabin Sessions, as you mentioned, the Wolf Cabin.
Yeah, the Wolf Cabin Sessions. I could totally see that, and you know, that's what I love about this band and about the music that we've made and this album that we've created. It's all of it was recorded in here, in this room, and you know, it's basically a log cabin, and you know, and some of it 4 a.m, you know, totally sort of smashed, you know, but like it's completely soundproof, and touch wood, I haven't had any complaints from the neighbours yet, and there's just something special about it. Like when you get in here and you shut the door, like it just seems to be kind of something magical about it. I think that would be a great idea. Maybe it's our own sort of Rancho de la Luna studios in a way. But I think down the line, why not, you know? But we're just desperate to get back in here, really, to be honest. We're kind of talking to each other and, you know, doing these Zoom meetings. My life is just Zoom meetings every day now, as I'm sure it is for you. But we're just really, really eager to kind of just get back in the same room. And turn it up loud and go for it, you know.
Excellent. One of the things that you've been doing in lockdown that I've sort of been sort of watching and everything, and it's helping to save our live music scene, basically, is what you've been doing. I mean, it's one of my favourite ever gigs of yours, and also was actually one of my least favourite for a completely different reason, was the last ever gig at the Bull and Gate. And I mean, that was that night, I thought was brilliant. But it was bittersweet in many ways with the loss of an important venue. And I talk on my show quite a bit about the fact that we're losing too many venues, and
it's terrible.
And COVID has it could well see the death knell of many more. And there's been various. I mean, you've done some online gigs to help Bush Hall and the Lexington. I mean, but I mean, what I mean, how much does this worry you? And what more can be done on this?
Well, yeah, it does worry me. And it worries me that some of the grassroots venues won't be able to get, you know, grants from the government or get any help. And it's kind of being left to, you know, people to donate to their crowdfunding page. I think having talked to Mark and Beverly from the Music Venue Trust a few times, I mean, I was aware that at one point, I think, it was about 700 small venues were under threat of closure, and you know, and sort of the approximately, probably about, I may be wrong, it was like 550 were kind of going to close unless they didn't get any help. So it's overwhelming to say the least, and I think the best thing you can do is focus on one venue at a time, and find, you know, when I did the Lexington, we managed to raise about $4,000, which really helped push it to its goal of $50,000. The Bush Hall is about 21,000 in, so it's about $7,000. Its goal is to reach 28. I've just sold a painting on eBay for about 250 quid, which was a cover of an online exclusive record called Kakistocracy that I did. Instrumental about Trump on his inauguration day. So I managed to sell that. It's the Twitter icon with Trump's hair. The blue bird with his hair.
Yeah, indeed.
So that's going to a fellow in Germany who won it. And so literally on its way now. So I'm just trying to, you know, because I think Frank Turner and I had a kind of chat. He suggested, you know, why don't you do it? Because he was doing it. He'd done it with the Southampton Joiners. I think he'd done it with the Tunbridge Wells Forum. And I think the main thing is to focus on venues that you have a connection with, that, you know, that you've played, played a few times. I've known Stacey, who runs the Lexington for years when she ran the Buffalo Bar as well. So, but yeah, cool. Doing that Bull and Gate show was, you know, it was really, really tragic. I mean, it's such a legendary venue, you know. It's the same with, you know, recording studios as well. I feel like a lot of music culture is being very much undermined, and I think it was being neglected before the pandemic.
Yeah, no, I'd agreed, and this has just highlighted it and made it worse. But yeah, I mean, the message definitely.
Yeah, you know, there's people in government, you know, in the Tory government who don't really care about. They're not really interested in the culture, in
no.
the art. You know, it's kind of a quite tragic, you know, that it's just been completely sort of, what's the word? Well, undermined. Yeah.
Sorry to put a downer on it, but yeah, that's
no,
where
no,
we
it's
are.
Fine.
Yeah, I know, but yeah.
But I think, you know, and I am. I'm just saying the truth, really.
Yeah. No, definitely.
If there's a way, I mean, it's just difficult right now. There's only so much we can do, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I think what I want to say to my listeners is just yeah. When as soon as you can support them, if they're, you know, as you say, the crowdfunding and everything, if you can do that, that's brilliant. Focus on a venue, and let's see if we can all help. I think
one of the things that has been good is I heard that Laura Marling was doing a couple of gigs at the Union Chapel, where she does the show, but she's filmed, professionally filmed. By a few cameramen, and then I think that might be tomorrow that she's doing it.
Okay.
And she's filmed, and you can buy the ticket and watch it online. But obviously, she's playing a gig to a completely empty, you know, venue.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that could be a way to sort of perhaps help save these venues. Where you go to the venue and you do a solo show, and you have it filmed from afar. By a professional film crew, and then, you know, you the whatever percentage goes to the venue.
Yeah, because you know? It's still then got all of the acoustics and the things that those sort of venue. I mean, Union Chapel is an amazing venue, so yeah, and that's.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, rather than, you know, because I've done a couple of shows where I've just been, I literally had my laptop and this little USB mic, and it's just in my studio, you know, in the studio, and it's pretty kind of lo-fi and haphazard, you know. So I think if you went out and you went to the actual venue itself, and like Laura's doing, which I think is brilliant, I think that could be, you know, that's perhaps something that's going to become the norm, you know, for at least the rest of this year.
Yeah, that'll be the interesting thing, how that sort of venues, and I know, because I know that the old Vic is doing something very similar with a couple of plays. It's how we actually make this work going forward.
But the main, you know, what the Music Venue Trust is doing is really great, you know, and they're making people aware. That's the main thing. It's just kind of don't forget about all these venues, you know.
Yeah, and I'll share a link on the webpage to the Music Venue Trust when the interview goes out.
Thank you.
So we're going to finish up now by playing the band's latest single, Strange Angels. I mean, what can you tell us about that?
Right. Yeah. Well, Strange Angels. It's one of the earliest songs we wrote, It's actually based on, Cass wrote most of the lyrics, and he was inspired by a book about this rocket scientist, which is called Strange Angels. So I think that's where the title came from. Oh God, I can't remember his name. I really should remember, but I didn't write the lyrics. But it's like this sort of crazy, lysergic, quite psychedelic journey of near-death experience and redemption and resurgence and kind of emerging out of the darkness, you know, and, you know, resurrection, that kind of thing. Just all the little things, the little ideas in life. And, you know, again, it was just one of those things where we just started playing and the song kind of wrote itself, and it was very quick. And, really, you know.
Brilliant.
It's, as they would say, all bangers, no mash.
And on that note, thank you very much for your time today. That was Ed Hardcourt of Loop Guru, and this is Loop Guru with Strange Angels.
I took a journey to the center of the soul. I looked for demons, but only found a hole. A pitfall light that was cast upon a shore. Guided me to lands that seemed to offer more. I lost some maps that charted waters gone before. Crash upon the rocks and walk upon the shore. I took my guide, but I fell into the hole. I saw the light, but then I lost control. Strange angels pass me by. Strange angels.
floor. The mess of tears and I couldn't stop the flow. A sense of pain that no one else had known. Gaze upon the truth, just gaze upon your land. She showed me all the truth inside the shape of man. To sleep with chance a dream was all I ever asked. And now I got to beg to get a final chance. Strange angels pass me by.
So